Yeah, so we just got done talking to Jeff Booth. Literally just got done, hit end on the session, and both turned and smiled to each other and said effectively the same thing. What a genuine human.
Yeah, and understanding too. It's always intimidating when you talk with somebody. You know, Bitcoin lore can slay your heroes, but also your heroes are very intimidating and people who are just so intelligent. And then when you talk to somebody, also it's just so kind. It's just so great to talk to people like that because we're not podcast hosts. We're not podcast hosts. We're just people having conversations.
Two dudes
We're
sitting
not.
in chairs that your mom recovered.
Yeah, she reupholstered these things. It makes a weird noise when I go like this in the background. They're trying to have conversations. I nod my head and like there's this like racket. But no, it's so great to be in a space, right, where you talk to people and they're just kind and genuine people and also super intelligent. We were talking about just the way that Jeff answers a question. You can ask and there is a superficial response that could easily be given that would kind of address the direct like question you gave. But Jeff doesn't do that. He starts from like first principles reasoning, a species of first principle reasoning that he has, whereas which is you're currently in the matrix. What would you think if you were in the matrix? What would you be led to think? Here's what you would be led to think. That's the way you're thinking now. So you're thinking within the matrix. Now, what would you think if you were then outside of it? How would you build? And so he kind of builds you up rhetorically, like it's rhetorical questions, but the answers, they follow from his, again, first principle assessment. This is the type of way you would be thinking if the system was the way it was or something like that.
Yeah. It's on the surface of it, if you're just listening for hot takes and you're just listening for something like flashy, you're not going to get that. But what you are going to get is, hey, Jeff, how do you make a club sandwich? And his answer is going to be, well, let me tell you about a farm and let me tell you about a plow. And the thing is, it's that's the right
It
way to
is.
answer that question,
Yes.
because it's all involved. Like, and then it's like, okay, now let me question the assumptions at every single level.
Because our thoughts would be if he had just said, you put the sandwich and the bread together, our presuppositions would be, and I bought those at a store or something like that. But like you think beyond the sandwich, beyond the store, where did things come from? The first principles generation of our ideas. And he uses this phrase, control system, to describe like the society we're in. I kind of reductively tried to call it like fiat monetary system or something like that at some point in the conversation to get a handle on what he's thinking. But he doesn't just like fall back on labels. He has this idea of us being controlled by just the system we are in, whatever it
You're
is,
the
and let's
fish
not label
swimming
it.
in water.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
you're
the
the fish
water.
swimming in water, and what do you know about water? Because it's always been there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you don't see it, right? It's your medium that you swim in. It's transparent to you.
And what he's trying to tell us is that Bitcoin is not a different pond. It's not a different ocean. It's not water. It's something that we haven't experienced. It's not a control system. And so we come from this at like everybody wants to reason by analogy because it's easier and it allows us to kind of visualize. That's why we were talking in the earlier episode that we recorded, we were talking about, is a web address really an address? Because like an address is a place
Physical, yeah, spatial.
digital has no space, but we're taking these terms that are spatial and we're applying them to digital, which has no spatial.
I think Lowry talks about that as reification. Like, we talk about the computing cloud, it makes it benevolent, benign. Oh, let's put our information in the cloud. No, you're giving your information to other people. So,
You're just putting it on a billion different servers.
And so, address, I just wonder if there's some, it translates easily from the physical to the digital, and we understand it's how you direct yourself to somebody
More it's an
else.
incantation. It's a spell
It's a,
almost. Like
yeah.
that's what you're doing when you're typing. You're just saying the right combination of numbers and letters to conjure up whatever it is that you're trying to conjure. It's witchcraft.
It is a cult in its operation, for sure, for someone like me who looked at an old box cathode ray TV and is like, this is from the future.
This is good. Yeah.
This is Terminator wonderful. 4. This
we
right
should
here.
Have stopped here.
We should have. I was contemplating getting a new television and everybody's recommending smart TVs. I was like, I want an inert black square that plays the movie that I plug into it externally from a DVD player.
Yeah.
I don't want something that talks to me and is friendly and jovial and has a bunch of junk in it. So, yeah. But
he throws that into it too. Like he's not naive. In fact, probably less naive than most.
Yeah.
Yet he is perhaps the most optimistic person that we've talked to. He didn't say it on this podcast, but I've seen him say it on other podcasts that, you know, he loves every second of his life. He loves everything that he's doing.
He even loved his seconds on our podcast. And that is saying something about your ability to motivate good conditions of existence through pure thought.
And comparing it to people that you know, use plant medicine, psychedelics and stuff to go touch that state of oneness, but then they come back into this world and they lose that ability. And, he's like, by removing yourself from the control system, and that's the functional part that we need to explore in just how to do that. But basically, there are no rules. I make the rules. In that, by removing yourself, you're able to just live in that state of oneness at all times.
And the way, someone can trivialize it as new agey to talk about generating consciousness and determining your response. But it's absolutely not. And I specifically zeroing in on his response to the question about Marx, it's just an inversion. I mean, Marx, the material conditions of existence generate our consciousness. And then Jeff is the exact opposite. And I mean, it's a philosophical position. It's not New Age. It is well thought out that our thinking generates our material reality. And so begin with your thoughts and then begin to meddle in the world. And that's the way when he talks about Bitcoiners, you can be a person who has Bitcoin and uses it within the control system. You are completely different than somebody who is a Bitcoiner or whatever outside of the control system. You're looking for the right moment to trade it for fiat. You're looking for ways you can leverage it to get other things or whatever. It's not just, no, this is what freedom is participating in a free market, and that is its own value.
Yeah. So where do you start to remove yourself from that system? I think you start by, if you want to determine your wealth, you look at it in terms of how much Bitcoin do I have, not how much dollars do I have in Bitcoin. And I'm not checking the Bitcoin price. I'm not looking at how they model it within that control system. And then also to just really lean into what he talks about as being superordinate to all, which is love and belonging. And he does the great job of inverting that as well, which is talking about, well, if love and belonging is the truth that is above the other truths or is at the bottom of all the truths from which all the other truths spring, then what would the system opposite of that look like, which would be hate and exclusion. And when you put it into that terms, I think it's really, he did such a great job of talking about, the Patriot Act is the opposite of patriotism.
It always is the case.
The Inflation Reduction Act was just inflation explosion. Stable coins are guaranteed loss coins. And
so what's the Genius Act? What's the opposite of a genius?
Oh, God, that's going to be true. Yeah. That's going to be true.
I don't even know what all the Genius Act does. Maybe it does some good things.
There is
some
dumb stuff in it. There is some dumb stuff in it. That is true.
Yeah.
The Idiot Act.
There's one thing, I don't know if I disagree. So the talk, I mean, you started off there. I didn't hear the podcast where he talked about belonging and love being superordinate. So I kind of came in to that conversation in media res and then heard Booth start talking about it. And then I tried to fit it into his talk, The Price of Tomorrow, right? His book. It's a view he has of human nature, I think. I asked him, is this an evolutionary view? And he does think that this is a condition we find about ourselves, that we need love and belonging due to an evolutionary history that led us to need these things to make us cooperative or something like that. I just tend to have a much more cynical exposition of human nature and
you
understanding.
You do. You think we're bastard-coated bastards dipped in bastard chocolate.
Which is why Bitcoin is fantastic, right? It's the solution of the problem of trust. We can't trust other apex predators. We can't. We need ways to mediate and coordinate cooperation without trust. It's not that I think that this person just wants love and belonging. I think that they want a position higher than me on the dominance hierarchy. And so, you know, they may also want love and belonging. We have lots of, Samson mentioned this, like inconsistent drives within us that some serve different evolutionary purposes. I just also think, and it's no doubt that we all want love and we all want belonging, but we also all want, not in all, but enough of us want a high position in the dominance hierarchy. We also want like sexual access to the right partners. We also want a huge reserve of resources so we can survive whatever winter, you know?
Yeah, but don't we want that because that's our interpretation of what love and belonging is? I grew up poor and I want to be a billionaire because I feel like that's where I'm safe.
Yeah.
I grew up unloved and therefore I want to sleep with 1,000 women because that makes me feel wanted. That is downstream of love and belonging. And I want to call out that perhaps that framework that you're talking about is within that control structure of a zero-sum game, that to stand on the peak, to be at the top of the dominance hierarchy is to believe in the zero-sum, that you do have to take, that you do have to conquer, that you do have to be a predator.
Yeah. Oh. The natural condition of history or the condition of nature is scarcity. It is zero sum. We evolved in that condition. Jason Lowry talks about this. You know, this Samson talks. Anybody who considers evolution talks about,
But nature also has symbiotic relationships, right? They have symbiotic organisms that like nature works.
As a defense strategy.
Against
other predators.
But it's offensive. Like it works in harmony. You know, the bee, the flower, the little fish swimming in and out of the whale's teeth, munching on the little niblets, and the ones that are on the body clearing away the parasites and stuff. Like,
yeah,
nature is.
So, which of those are humans? Are we the wolf, or are we the fish that swims and nibbles at the tooth? I think we're the wolf. I think that's what humans have always been, as apex predators. We devour. We don't nibble at the teeth of other creatures.
But I think we're both. I think we are. There are some examples of people that are that, and then there are others that are latching on. You had the question to Jeff about, you know, what if you have muscular dystrophy or.
And to give context to that question,
yeah,
it's asked in good faith because I do a summer camp in the past. I've done it many times with people who have muscular dystrophy. And so I'm friends with lots of people on Facebook who are either themselves extremely disabled or work with the extremely disabled. And to people like that, not universally, but they tend to be generally less libertarian because they're like, the state really needs to be involved to care for certain people because it's not going to be done otherwise, and they can't care for themselves through no fault of their own. And so I ask that question like in good faith because I want to know the answer to that too. Yeah. Like I'm a generally free market person, but it strains the free market when we think about human vulnerability, that we're animals. We are born into a condition of vulnerability as children, and which are dependent on adults, and we inevitably, our body decays into another stage of dependency as we become elderly and depend on care. Humans, we depend on care when we cannot reciprocally care for others.
Yeah, but that presumes that the state is the only one that will provide, because it is
acknowledging
the control structure that says that it's a zero-sum game and that people will not, you know, just give to that. And I almost jumped in because I was about to say, like, I feel like there's an obvious answer to this, because your question was around, like, you know, if we live in this post-economic society, this post-economic world where everything is abundant and people are able to express the particular fractal or mosaic of their own genius to the best of their ability.
I love Jeff's description of that, by the way. Maybe not off the cuff. He's probably said it before, but that's a very beautiful description of, and I do believe on a heartfelt level that that's true outside of whatever market, that somebody, everybody does have a particular genius to add. But yeah.
I mean, your question was like, well, what, you know, what is it? What's there for those people? What's there for those people that need that care? And to me, it's just very obvious is that, well, in, there's a world of abundance, then they're not going to need that care to come from another individual, that they're going to have everything that they need, probably have the advancements in medicine and things like that to cure it well. But even if, like, let's just assume that that doesn't happen.
And it's not the case right now. So, like, how do we operate right now?
Yeah. So, but just like say, okay, well, what if you could just replace the human caretaker with the robot caretaker for 1/20th of the cost.
Again, in a near-term future, that might be possible.
In
a near-term future, that might be possible. It cannot happen right now.
It's like, we're talking like very near-term future.
We'll see.
Like very, like
people need China to survive
rolled,
until
China we could just rolled out like a couple hundred thousand humanoid robots that are capable of effectively.
If you go to a disabled person right now who can't care for themselves and say, we're going to take away all of the state provision care that you receive because we're going to get
robots
in 5 years.
Nobody's arguing that. Nobody's arguing that. What I'm saying is that it will be the case that with abundance, whenever it occurs, that those individuals will have everything that they need. And they will be able to express themselves way more fully at less cost. Why maybe?
I only say, this is maybe not what you were thinking, but the ability to express oneself depends on having developed with human interaction the ability to express oneself. And so a robot can never fully help a person develop into a human.
If it can get you where you need to, if it can get you out of the house every single day with the same sort of mobility that a human has to be able to meet up with all these other people that were previously homebound that could only go somewhere if they had a person that was willing to take them there, then you're going to explode their opportunity. And in fact, it now makes me think that perhaps one of the greatest untapped resources will be that community that has previously been sort of locked up. Like Stephen Hawking was in a wheelchair. What if his wheelchair had fucking rockets on it?
Yeah.
And he could just go, hey, you know what? I'm going to New York City today to meet all my other friends.
An exoskeleton removes rock. Yes, whatever thing. But no, I agree with all of that, but we can't live in a near-term future that is not the present. We have to live in the present. And so as long as we agree that right now, however predatory the state is, we require maybe state provisioned care, or like we need to ensure that charitable giving
it's not state provisioned care. The state provisions nothing. All of the provisions of the state come stolen from the people.
So they require stolen care.
Call
it whatever you will. Yeah. We need to steal right now from people so that we can care for our most vulnerable.
Yes.
That's the case, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. It's a bad situation, but we live in a very bad world. We live in a fallen world.
We live in a great world.
We live in a world that's getting better. And we live in a world we can keep on making better. But we don't live in a perfect world, and so we can't have perfect solutions.
But we live in the best world that's ever existed.
Okay, Candide.
Is it not better? Is it not better than in 1900? Is it not better than 1700 and 1000?
It's getting better.
Is it not better than 1985?
Neither here nor there, but it's getting better.
Live in the best world that's ever existed in this world.
Oh, I see what you're saying. We live in a very good world. And you could say we live in the best world as long as you don't say that to obscure or occult the very severe deficiencies we need to be fighting to remedy.
Yeah, but that's the whole check your privilege thing. It's like, I can't enjoy this thing unless
you can enjoy it.
What are you saying? Like, I can't say that this is the best world without also saying that, oh, there's still suffering.
No,
like,
I can
say that it's the best world.
Yeah, as long as you also acknowledge this other thing.
Why do I need to acknowledge
that?
You
don't need to verbally acknowledge it, but in this conversation, some people will say this is the best world, and so I'm taking my chips and going back to my mansion.
Yeah. But I mean, those are also the people that currently are having all their chips stolen from them in order to fund a incredibly inefficient state process that, you know, say you probably take $100 from people and $1 of it actually ends up helping out.
I think it's all fucked up too. I just don't know what the right answer is, because I'm reading another book too, Dependent Rational Animals. I'm reading with this with our mutual friend, Rick, by Alistair McIntyre. And his whole thesis in this book is he is a moral philosopher he's passed away, did serious work in the realm of moral philosophy, ethics, like what is the right action in a given set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And the point in this book is we've developed our ethical theories typically as if we're all kind of perfectly free moral agents, like autonomous people that can choose this way or that way. We don't typically build into our moral theories a recognition that we all pass through stages of vulnerability and dependence in which we cannot give to other people what we need to get in return. There's going to be a non-reciprocal exchange. We rely on others. And so I just like keep on challenging myself with that, because I am a very free market person. I do dislike the government. I agree, like with our conversation with Sal Pineda, all of the personal pain that inflation causes too. It's not just not just thievery. It's something more like structural violence. It is something that hurts people. But I struggle to think, you know, how do we also acknowledge our own individual vulnerabilities and periods of vulnerability, and also people who will be profoundly stuck in that stage their entire life.
But those, like, okay, so everybody has their own optimus that alleviates nearly all of that vulnerability to the point that what you need other humans for is simply human connection. You don't need them to take you to the bathroom.
Right. And when we get to that point, that'll be fantastic. Yeah. But we don't live there yet.
We do. It's just not evenly distributed.
And that's
that is the case. Like the case is
no sucker to the person who doesn't have it. Like, don't worry, bro. We got the technology, but you don't get it yet. Maybe 10 years, it'll be equally distributed, but good luck. We agree on this.
No, we do. No, we don't.
Because, again...
You're focusing on the negative.
And you're focusing on the positive, and they're both true. It's just like we need to find a way to integrate them.
Yeah, but the truth is what you believe in.
Not all.
It is.
I can't... If I am disabled and need care, I can't think my way into being cared for. I need somebody to give me something.
But if you're disabled and need care, then you have a better outlook than any other person who is ever... ever existed that was disabled and needed care.
Yeah, you still need care though.
Right, but right. I still need food.
The ability to go out.
The guy with no legs doesn't need shoes. Like, does he have to acknowledge that I need shoes?
No, because you have the ability to go out. You have the ability to go out and in a free market or even in a non-free market to do some work, get some money and go buy the shoes. This person doesn't have a skill like you do where you can go out and work to get the money and then go buy the shoes or whatever.
The world is trended like away from any sort of manual labor into white collar labor. Like there's nothing that, unless you are like, there's the exclusion here of like mentally disabled, but physically disabled, a physically disabled person now is more equal to an able-bodied person than at any point in history. And they're only gaining.
They're getting better.
They're only gaining.
I'm talking about people, like, meet a person with serious muscular dystrophy. Some of them can't talk. Some of them have ventilators breathing for them. Some of them, they can't type either. They're, like, they can barely operate a power wheelchair. They can't move their limbs.
Yeah, but now they have Neuralink and they can stick a thing in their brain. They can communicate telepathically.
Yeah.
They can drive a car and they can read a book and they can write.
If they had developed with a sense of autonomy from birth, the thing with disabled people, and this happens to everybody, but it tends to happen to disabled people more often, unfortunately, is their wings are clipped psychologically from a very young age because they're not told you can do anything. They rely on their parents' care for everything. Some of them, age 35, they're still living in their parents' house. And so you meet some, not all disabled people, but many, you'll meet them and they have almost a childlike aspect because there was no point when they could just be thrown out into get out of the house and get a job. They were always, it's a very sad thing. It is the case. People are psychologically crippled too oftentimes due to a disability through no fault of their own.
That's just a more extreme example of what Jeff was talking about, the control system that we live in, where we have been psychologically
for sure
that we don't know what true freedom feels like because we constantly are looking for someone to turn towards rules and make it fair and yeah. do this and do that for us.
It's a continuum, like, and a gradient of crippling,
it
for sure.
It is. Absolutely. And we're just saying that, like, yeah, I mean, you're just picking a spot on it.
I'm
also acknowledging on it, reality. Higher, but there's yeah. there's lower than that
there
too.
There is, definitely, right? yeah. You know? And there's even worse. You're absolutely true.
There's but there's
even
also worse. Better.
There's also better, for sure.
You know, yeah. And
but to the extent that you are of the view that because everybody's possessed of equal dignity, everybody needs to be allowed to live some sort of life, a dignified life, then we're going to have to provide something for some people more than for others.
Yeah, but dignity is a personal thing. Like, if you look at someone and you say, because you can't go outside, because you can't put your shoes on, because you can't shower yourself, you don't have dignity. That is you making a judgment on them that is a result of your own fear of not being able to have those freedoms. That there are plenty of people mm-hmm. that live a disabled life that do not feel disabled.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's not like you're putting your own fear upon them in calling them or in saying that they don't have the ability to have dignity.
No, I didn't say they didn't have the ability. I said we all have dignity regardless of whatever level of capacities we have. It's like the Christian notion of having a soul, essentially, is what I was getting at.
I mean, like, there's nothing that's undignified about having a wheelchair. There's nothing that's undignified about having somebody have to help you use the bathroom.
No, and so as long as they have somebody to help them use the bathroom and instead are not living in squalor and filth because nobody's caring for them, then that's an undignified state. If you need help using the restroom and nobody's there to help you, nobody should have to live like that.
But that's your judgment.
It's a judgment I'm comfortable making.
Yeah,
right?
Is it Epictetus? I can't remember. One of the
you're gonna push Stoicism on the disabled for sure.
One of the great philosophers that was like, you know, he just chose to like live in squalor, live in that, and that was his choice.
Diogenes, maybe
he was definitely dignified. In his own mind, you can certainly be dignified and live in something that somebody else defines as squalor.
You can be.
You know?
It's
imparting your own judgment on it.
Yeah. There are more and less dignified ways to live.
They're all individual.
They all depend on, they're all contextual, for sure. But I just think that we need to make sure that everybody has the resources if they are unable to acquire them themselves through severe vulnerability dependency that is unchosen, that they have the ability to access a minimally dignified life.
Yeah, but thinking the state is going to provide that.
I'm open to other avenues.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is like the state has like a proven track record of not doing that, despite taking huge amounts of funds for it.
It has a proven track record of holding those people hostage to say, if you don't give me a bunch of money, these people are going to die. I mean, that's the sick part, right? The state will say, give me all your taxes because we needed to support this vulnerable population.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to go invade this country over here. Don't knock a bunch of shit over. Yeah. So it is true. Like, I think the state is abhorrent in that way. I just struggle to see in our present circumstances any configuration of enlightened consciousness that can remedy what is a material deficiency.
Is there anything the state does well?
There is something that, again, democracy isn't this, like they say, democracy is not the best system, but it's the least worst. Maybe the state is a stage we pass through where it's not the best thing, but it's like the least bad we could do. I don't know. It's in any case where we find ourselves historically.
It seems to be like, I would agree with that. I would say that that is the case, that it's just that's kind of like the argument of it's like whoever enslaved the other people was the worst humans in the world. It's like, everybody was trying to enslave everybody else. They were just the ones that were better at it. And so you're just getting mad at somebody for being competent where it's a continuation of what Booth was talking about was just the victimhood thing. It's just get away from the victimhood, get away from that I'm in this situation because of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in this situation because I choose. So.
Yeah.
I think we settled it.
I think I do think we agree. We're just pushing and pulling because we both dislike the state a lot and we don't want to. We're both savvy to like the way the world is, but we also want to find a better future and it's tough.
I think they do good with flags. Some states make nice flags. I'm trying to say something nice about the state.
Patriotism.
Yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with the state, actually. Yeah, this is great propaganda. They made some
I love it, man. Like, yeah.
Really good movies.
They did.
Questionable songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll never be just Tom Cruise and like an F-16 or something just screaming above an American flag, and then an eagle flies nearby, and then you turn over and there's a bust of George Washington. You're just like thrumming with patriotism and just like, I've won.
Oh, let freedom ring. All right.
Yeah.